Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, May 29th. I'm Ray Graff. Today's program is the Copyright Forum, and joining us in the studio are Paul Rapp, Polly Law, and Bill Westwood. They're here to answer your questions about protecting your writing, music, and art, leveraging the value of your intellectual property, if you will. If you have a question, give us a call, 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You may also email us, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, but the number is 800-348-2551. Bill, Polly, and Paul are here to answer your questions. It's the Copyright Forum. It begins after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Lucky you. It's the Copyright Forum today, and to answer your questions, we have the great panel we usually welcome to answer your questions. Paul Rapp is an intellectual property lawyer and writer in the Berkshires. He represents musicians, writers, fine artists, and businesses involved in the creative economy. He lectures widely on intellectual property issues and wrote a column for Metroland. That's familiar. Bill Westwood is one of the country's leading medical illustrators and a professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. And Polly Law is a past president of the Graphic Artists Guild, an organization focused on the rights of artists. She is a designer, illustrator, and artist whose works are in numerous private collections and is represented by galleries in Rhinebeck, New York, along with Provincetown and Nantucket, Massachusetts. Paul, Bill, and Polly, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Ray.
Hey.
Thank you.
We've gotten all the microphone buttons all worked out now. We're ready.
I think we should push a few more buttons.
Zach the engineer drives Zach crazy. Steam is coming out of his ears. Our number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. I'll throw this caveat out there. Anytime that our producer Jim Lavoulis is here, I check the email. I'm notoriously bad at it. You give it a shot. I might see it. Maybe we'll read it. Otherwise, just call 800-348-2551. And I put out a couple of topics that we could discuss. Paul has vetoed them both. So you say we just go right to the phones, yeah?
Hey, we got two calls.
All right, let's go then. Noel in Amherst, Mass., you're on.
Yes, thank you. If I have an LLC by one name, Table Tennis Express, I have a table tennis center by the name of Zing. I've had design T-shirts that will be sold under the name of Zing. In other words, copyright Zing 2018. So there are two related questions. The first is, given that that's not my LLC, but it is my table tennis center, do I get to, would I be limited in my ability to defend that copyright under the name of Zing rather than under the name of the umbrella? Second is, do I need to update year to year? Like next year, will I need to change on things that are printed to copyright 2019? Thank you.
Here we go.
First question first, you would have to, you know, unless you filed with the Department of State a assumed name for the LLC as Zing, and if you did that, then you could register it under the LLC or Zing because they both represent the LLC. Otherwise, I guess you'd register it as Zing and just say that Zing is a solo, you know, it's a solo, it's just owned by you personally. If Zing is owned by the LLC, I think you could just register the copyright under the LLC's name. I mean, why not do that?
Yeah,
because it's much longer and it changes the look of the graphic, but...
It's just going to be the name of the copyright holder. It's not going to be the design on the shirt. That's going to be the design on the shirt. But the owner, the copyright owner, probably ought to be the LLC.
Okay. Yes. Thank you. Yeah. And do I need to? Is it useful, valuable, protective? Next year to change copyright 2018 to copyright 2019.
Only if you change the design substantially. If it's still the same design, the copyright's good for 75 years plus your lifespan.
Yeah.
70.
Beautiful. 70.
And beware, the Copyright Office doesn't like registering T-shirt designs.
Really?
Yeah.
I've had a really hard time getting those. They say there's not enough copyrightable expression in a T-shirt. I mean, if it's a really elaborate design, yeah, they'll register it. But really simple stuff.
Like I'm with stupid or something like that.
Yeah. So I can make up some of my own Keep on Truckin' T-shirts.
If there's an illustration on it. Original.
Yeah, I guess I can't use the original illustration. All right.
Everybody else does. Why not?
You make a point. Gary in Schenectady. Gary, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm interested in adapting a screenplay to a stage play. And I want to know, what do I first have to do? Who do I reach out to? And what kind of expenses am I looking at?
You'd have to contact the rights holder to the screenplay and get permission.
Probably the producer, probably the studio, although sometimes the screenwriter will hold back theatrical rights. But I would start with the movie producer and be ready for a horrible experience. If it's a big movie, they're going to be very, very loath to grant theatrical rights.
Unless you have a big name in writing adaptations.
Yeah, I mean, because, Broadway is so bereft of ideas now that they, a lot of their plays are based on movies, which
Or cartoons, SpongeBob SquarePants.
Yeah, which are themselves bereft of ideas, but there you go. So, maybe you can get lucky. I mean, it doesn't hurt to ask.
Okay, and I would be asking for theatrical rights.
Yes.
And typically, would the studio or the producer be looking for a percentage or a flat fee, or how does that work in the business?
Probably a flat fee, to begin with, and then a percentage after that. Mm-hmm. Definitely a percentage after that.
Yeah,
and a piece of the merchandise,
royalties.
and they'll tell you what kind of credits they want and all the rest. And they probably will want approval of the look and feel of the play as well, just to make sure that their property's being adequately portrayed.
All right, and another wrinkle: if the play, if the movie I'm looking to adapt to the stage is itself already based upon another stage play, who's the original to go to? Do I go to the producer, or do I go to the original entity that holds the rights to the original play on which the movie is based?
They'll tell you. I've been working with a client that wants to do a play that was based on a movie that was based on a play, and the movie studio at this point owned all of the rights, so we had to go through them. They'll tell you if they have the rights to do it.
All right.
All right.
Gary, thanks
a lot
for the call. We appreciate it very much. What about satire?
I was going to bring that up. If it's a parody, then kind of all bets are off.
Right. Yeah. Did Mel Brooks, for instance, have to pay Universal for the look and set design of Young Frankenstein when he clearly ripped off Bride of Frankenstein?
I don't think so, because, he was doing a parody, and parody gets an increasingly, broad. I mean, I had a client that did a parody theatrical version of 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, my gosh. That must have been hideous.
It was for me as the attorney, because to be able to determine whether it was a parody, I had to read the damn book.
Oh, boy. Very nice.
You know.
Okay. Boy, you're grumpy today, Paul Rapp. Let's go back to the phones. Bethany in Glens Falls. Bethany, you're on.
Hi. I have a question about intellectual property release. I work at a children's museum, and we have a lot of art submitted by children. And in the submission form, there's a stipulation that states that children, people who submit their artwork, then it becomes legally owned by the museum, and we have the right to reproduce it and make money off of it. And they relinquish rights. But we didn't have any signatures on that form, and recently we had a lawyer who said that that's not legally binding.
Yeah,
so what are your thoughts on this and how to move forward?
Yeah, because they're under 18, so they can't sign off on it. I also think, I'm sorry, but I think that's a really bad policy.
Yeah.
You're stealing the rights, reproduction
rights.
You're
exploiting these kids.
Okay. Yeah, it's like the...
Right. Well, we haven't actually done any reproductions because we were unsure.
Yeah. Well, children can own copyrights, but children cannot sign legally binding contracts.
Right.
And now, so you know, and in order to transfer a contract, you have to have the copyright, or to transfer a copyright, you've got to have the copyright owner's signature
on, in writing,
and you know, on something.
Well, that seems like an odd thing that a child can own a copyright, but can't then sign a contract to say, okay, you can use my copyrighted material.
Right. It can be structured so that the parents can sign off on it, you know, as the guardian.
Right.
And which is what you would have to do.
Right. Okay, so we could create a form that stated that the museum would own the copyrights, but then have the child and their legal guardian sign off on it, and that would be okay?
What? Okay, what is the basis for the museum owning the copyright?
Well, let's not judge here.
Okay, everybody just take a deep breath.
I'm just trying to help Bethany in getting where she needs to go. And, you know, history will judge what the museum
is. Yeah. You know, if
But, yes, you could have the parent sign off.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. All right. Everybody take a step back now. This might be perfectly benign. Bill, I want to let you get in.
I'm going to jump off of a high spot in a moment. I have to ask the same question. I am curious as to why the museum would want to acquire those rights. Or feel it necessary.
Okay. Sure. Well, we have our museum is home to the largest collection of art made by children in the United States. We have over 10,000 pieces. And so part of what we do is sometimes, you know, they release the rights. They're part of an international youth art exchange, and it's a competition. And so they submit the pieces to the museum, and then we then acquire them after they have submitted them. So they submit them in full understanding, knowing that they are going to the museum. So my question really is just, I guess, is there a legal way to do this? Because when you have art in a museum, you do a lot of reproduction.
Right. And the answer is yes. You know,
there is a way to do it.
Mm-hmm. But
Bill and I are both in great agreement that we feel that this is extremely exploitative.
Okay. Yes. Well, we don't know all the details, but all right.
We know enough of the details.
Let's take a break here, and everybody's going to have a cool drink of water. It's Vox Pop, or something stronger even. It's the Copyright Forum. Our number is 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support for WMC comes from Whitney's Farm Market and Country Gardens Cheshire, featuring We Plan, You Plant Garden Design Service with on-site selection of nursery stock, tree, shrub, perennials, privacy hedges, and installation, whitneysfarm.com. Mass Match, for over 16 years, a locally owned dating and matchmaking service connecting singles through private matchmaking in western Massachusetts and beyond, massmatch.com. Saratoga Jewish Cultural Festival, presenting Eat, Pray, Love, the 10th Annual Women's Gala, Brunch, Auctions, and Music, June 3rd, 11 a.m. at Hyatt Place, Malta, New York, 518-495-0779. Coldham & Hartman Architects, serving clients throughout New England and New York, with architecture designed for resilience and renewability, designed for the next 100 years, cnharchitects.com. And Merrick Bookstore, Millbrook, an independent bookshop with a fully curated selection of fiction, nonfiction, and toys for all ages, MerrickBooks.com.
Everyone's relaxed now. It's Vox Pop, the Copyright Forum, 2:21 on a Tuesday afternoon. Ray Graff here with you at 800-348-2551. What a panel we have. We have Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp to answer your intellectual property questions, whether they be controversial or relatively benign. Let's go to line 4 and Dave in Schenectady. Dave, you're on.
Hi, thanks for the call. Nice show.
Thank you.
I was wondering if I wanted to publish a memoir online through something like Amazon Self-Publishing or any self-publishing site. Is it automatically copywritten when I do that?
Well, go ahead. You have to look at the agreement first and really read the whole thing before you say agree. But generally, you would be better advised to register the copyright on your own.
But the easy answer is it is as soon as it's published, you own the copyright to it. But as we've gone in great detail every time we're on the air, because it's important. It's a good idea to register your copyright.
Easier to enforce.
Well, not only that, but it gives you significantly more clout and leverage to enforce. Because the penalties go up to $30,000 to $150,000 potentially for an infringement.
Okay.
And it's, you know, $35 to $55 to do it, and it's fairly easy. So
right.
And it's a professional expense. If you're
Can you do it online?
Yes, you can. Copyright.gov.
But the website is a little tricky to navigate.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's a slog.
If you find a teenager with glasses and tell them, they'll figure it out for you.
All right, Dave. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. It's 800-348-2551, the Copyright Forum on Vox Pop. And we go to Sharon in Saratoga Springs. Would have been better if you were in Sharon Springs, but Sharon in Saratoga Springs, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a metalsmith background, and I'm currently creating. I also teach art to adults with disabilities, and I've created two pieces that are adaptive pieces to help people to either play music or to paint. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if I should take these. And, you know, have a copyright on them and protect them in some way.
I think this is a patentable item.
It does sound like more like a patent, which is much more complex and difficult and expensive to get. If you think the ideas have legs and that somebody will want to, you know, mass produce them, I would recommend a patent lawyer.
Yeah, speak to a patent lawyer.
Very good.
Thank you, Sharon, for the call. Why is it more complicated and more expensive to do that?
First of all,
stakes are higher. You know, ultimately,
copyrights protect work of originality, and patents protect things that are purely functional. Like I tell my copyright clients, you know, copyright, you know, basically protects things that are useless. Patent protects things that are useful.
Wow.
That's true.
Unlike copyright, where you can register anything and you say, this is my original work, and swear to it, they'll say, oh, in patent, they go and actually research it to make sure there's nothing come before. And you have to show that what you have is novel and is an improvement on anything that's existed
before. And you have to show when you came up with the concept, and you have to have proof of that in the way of some sort of drawings or something.
So how do you prove it? If I sketch the next invention on the back of a cocktail napkin.
First come, first served, pretty much.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, getting it filed.
That was Edison's big trick.
With Tesla?
He would go and just file patent after patent after patent in hopes that, you know, he'd beat everyone else, and he very often did. Because other people, you know, were...
As soon as he had an idea, he would...
Patent it.
And patents have also... I'm not as familiar with patent law as I am with copyright, but patents more recently have become more difficult to get. And more expensive. I have a patent in an item. I think in the 1970s, it cost my partner and I over $20,000.
Yikes!
Yeah,
it can cost that much easily.
Yeah.
You know, 5 to 10 is if it's clean and easy. But
that's prohibitive to create creativity.
Well,
of people who are coming up with things on their own.
That's why businesses get patents and. Individuals like us typically don't.
And then once you have a patent, then you have to defend it. And somebody told me that the typical patent case, it costs $200,000 before you go to court.
Yeah.
Yikes.
You know,
my dad had a patent way back when, and DuPont just steamrolled right over them.
Well, the guy that did the variable speed windshield wipers took him, 20 years or something like that before he ever got a penny, and it bankrupted him. Patents are tough. But
getting back to the caller, the only thing she could copyright is the look of the thing. Mm. She couldn't copyright the mechanisms.
She might be able to copyright the look of the thing
if it's really unique.
Yeah.
But patenting, she can protect
the functionality.
I think it would at least be worth speaking with a patent attorney. I mean, forget about all these things we're saying. They're not true. But from my perspective, finding out from a patent attorney and maybe getting a patent search done to find out what the potential of those things are. Because if there's great potential, then you can find a company that will back you and support you
and pay for the patent.
And pay for the patent.
You know that there is now Google Patents.
Oh, no, I didn't know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's much easier to look through than the patent office's, the Google database.
No, I didn't know that. Yeah.
It must have been really tough before computers.
You had to send a clerk to go and look through the files.
No. You had to either go there yourself or hire an attorney to go there and hand-pick through those 3x5 cards.
And that's how so many attorneys got rich.
Oh, yeah.
Let's go back to the phones. Justin and Phoenicia. Justin, you're on.
Hey, Ray. Hey, copyright panel.
Hey.
So I work for Menlo Retreat. It's a retreat center and spa up here in Phoenicia. And we just worked on building a new website. And we just launched it, menlo.us. But in the work, we were getting rid of some old images. And as we were looking around, we came across one of our images from our old website in a local publication. Now, the catch is this. The image was taken by a dear Tibetan friend of Tibet House and was donated to our nonprofit. And the photo was used in an ad in a publication, which we love, but the ad was for the I Heart New York campaign, which they're running nationally.
Ooh.
So I want to ask you guys how to deal with the rights in regards to donated images.
Well,
what's the etiquette for reaching out to an advertiser when they've taken an ad from somebody that...
Donating the image doesn't transfer the copyright.
It
has to be done in writing.
Allows a specific usage of the image.
Right.
So it's the Tibetan. Is the Tibetan guy particularly litigious?
No, Sonam Soksam is his name. He's very generous. So the question is, what's the etiquette of who should... inquire about this.
I think that
we feel obligated since he gave it to us.
Yeah, but he's still going to own the copyright to it, so it's really going to be his bag to go after.
But they could write a letter on their letterhead.
Yeah,
under their auspices.
Yeah. Just say this was given to us.
It's on the front page of a really well-known publication.
And he should immediately, if he's interested, register this image. I'm assuming it probably hasn't been registered.
I mean, he's very generous, so he's not going to be really into chasing after it. But should we at least let the advertiser know that they didn't at least credit the image?
Absolutely.
Actually, I would suggest that maybe be suggested to them that they volunteer at least a contribution.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, in lieu of a licensing fee.
Okay, so that wouldn't be tacky to...
Not at all. You know, this is something of value. I mean, they've used it prominently in an advertising campaign, and this is something that companies pay dearly for, for good...
Yeah, and it was a beautiful gift to us.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Okay, Justin.
Thank you, Justin. We appreciate the call. It's Vox Pop, the Copyright Forum. Polly Laws here, Paul Rapp, and Bill Westwood, and you at 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Willow in Stillwater. Willow, you're on.
Hi. Thank you so much. I am calling because I recently created, as part of my senior honors thesis in college, a solo performance that I created in the vein of Anna Deavere Smith's work, that I did from interviews, where I did about 5 hours of interviews and then created a 50-minute solo performance piece out of those interviews. So all the content is from those interviews, and what's not from those interviews is original poetry and artwork that I use in the show, created by the man who I am portraying in the solo performance, whose story I'm telling, mm-hmm. who I did the interviews with. So I'm curious in the context, because there's a lot of different parts to it. There's the poetry, there's the artwork, and then there's the, you know, interviews that I've transformed into the show. How would you go about, because he has none of it copyrighted for himself, and he allowed me to use them, and he doesn't really care that much, but if I'm going to be performing this out in the world, I want his work and my work protected. So I'm curious how I'd even start going about that.
Well, I think you want to get an interview release from him.
A letter,
And last week I was looking for releases, and I just wrote interview release, and, you know, there was a time 20 years ago when I had to write one myself. They're all over the place. Just Google interview release. You'll see all these folklore centers where they're doing oral histories and stuff, and they're just really easy one paragraph things to sign off. And you know, and I suppose have him assign his rights to the interview itself to you, so that you can copyright your play.
Well, it's copyrighted, so she could register it.
But after she gets,
And
then I think in the program you need to say, you know, poetry used with permission by.
Okay.
But you just do Google interview release and get the one that just feels right and have the guy sign it, and then you'd be good to go.
Okay, and then from there, I would just need to go through, like, what's the, like, least, I don't know, strenuous copyright process for me to copyright my own show?
Just go to copyright.gov and tell them you're registering a dramatic work that incorporates all these elements.
Okay.
And then, if you've got a video
of the
whole
thing. Okay, so then the poetry within it will be protected
that. Yeah.
So you would send a video and not a script?
Either one.
Okay.
Either one.
All right, Willow, thanks a lot for the call.
If there's dance elements and movement elements, I guess a video would probably be better.
It would be very tough to upload a video. It would be a lot of megabytes. Wouldn't you send a DVD or...
You can
they
send
They might
it.
Ask you to.
You send a disc if there's an issue.
Let's go over to the next caller, and Alan in Rhinebeck. Alan, you're on.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Get it off the speaker. I have a patent question. I years ago worked on a engineering project, and the patent was filed on the material or the design. The design was fully described in the body of the patent, but the claims didn't cover all of the features of the design. And my question is, does that mean that part of the design that wasn't claimed can be used without any problem with infringing on the patent?
None of us are qualified to.
Yeah, but I don't think so. I think you could be challenged. Was a patent granted for the rest
The patent was granted. I'm one of the inventors.
Was it more than 20 years ago?
No, it was about 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay.
I think they would, if they wanted to, could come after you and, you know, even if you prevailed, as we talked about a moment ago, the cost would be pretty astronomical.
Yeah, I would talk to a patent attorney.
Yeah, I would talk to a patent attorney.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, because I have a number of patents, but my understanding was if it's not claimed, it ain't covered, it isn't protected.
Well, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, that might very well be true, but that doesn't mean, just like in copyright situations, that a big company with deep pockets couldn't come after you and challenge you on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
All right, Alan, thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. It's the Copyright Forum on WAMC with Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp. And over to Kathy in Latham. Kathy, you're on.
Great, thank you. I have a hobby where I make handmade greeting cards. And I also am a big reader. I read a lot of periodicals and the newspaper. And I've come across some great, you know, phrases that might be evocative of a certain feeling. It might not even be a whole sentence. And my idea is to take these phrases and put them on the cards. And at some point, maybe when I retire, commercialize them. I obviously would want to give credit to the writer and the publication. And I'm just wondering how I might go about doing that, what would be involved. It just seems such a shame with such beautiful writing that's going to get stuck in obscurity. And I just think it would be a unique way to give someone a greeting.
Well, if it's a very short phrase,
you can't copyright it.
You can't really copyright it, and I would go ahead and use it.
And you don't have to give any attribution either.
Yeah. But you can if she sounded
could.
Like she wanted to. Yeah.
Yeah, and as long as it doesn't look like the person you're quoting is endorsing the product, that it's just a straight up quote, you know, I think you'll probably be okay. I wouldn't credit the publication. But certainly if it's a famous person and you just want to, you know, have a little quote, obviously the longer the quote is, the closer you're going to get to the line of infringement. But if it's just a short phrase of, you know, half a dozen words, you should be okay.
How about a complete sentence or several sentences? Then we're in that dangerous territory.
Yeah, the more you use, the more the more difficult it gets.
Yeah, you're heading out of the gray area into the black and white area.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Kathy. Over to Wayne. Wayne in Schenectady is on. Wayne.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you. I published a technical book, and then another author came along, took 50 pages of it, put it into his book, and didn't acknowledge it. My publisher went after him and got a payment, and so that was taken care of. But the man was unethical, and 50 pages is not just theft, it's grand larceny.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, should this be reported to his university? He's a professor at a major university. And the professional societies he belongs to, is certainly unethical behavior.
I would think he'd be bound to report himself once he, once they came after him. But if you don't think that his university or the professional societies know about this, then you can back it up with documentation. Why not send it in?
That's plagiarism as well as copyright infringement.
He didn't attribute you at all?
Not at all.
Okay.
I had a personal communication. He claims that he attended a course where he just copied the course notes.
So?
that's still infringement.
The truth is, I believe he did so. And he really stole the course notes. And the course notes were a revision or reordering of my material beyond his capabilities.
He was just
stealing course notes.
It doesn't matter what the source was. Right. He did not originate the material. He stole it from someone else, in this case, you.
He took it without authorization, and that's a violation of copyright. It's also, from a university's point of view, and perhaps his professional societies, a plagiarism issue.
Yes, universities, as you probably know, are very concerned about their students copying material off the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
And they have software to search the Internet to check whether a student's paper has been taken from the Internet.
Yeah, I've used it.
Yes, okay.
All right, Wayne, we got to take a break here, but thank you very much. It's the Copyright Forum on WAMC, Vox Pop, 800-348-2551 is the number. And we'll be back with more of your calls in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from State Street Fruit Store, Deli, Wines, and Spirits, downtown Northampton, a locally owned, community-minded grocery and specialty food store since 1922. Wine tastings every Friday, 4 to 7, statestreetfruit.com. Gazebo, Northampton, Massachusetts, an independent lingerie shop specializing in bra and post-mastectomy fittings, providing support to the Pioneer Valley for almost 40 years, the-gazebo.com. Elements Hot Tub Spa, downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, offering hot tubs in 5 indoor or outdoor private rooms, plus a team of massage therapists for individuals and couples. ElementsHotTubSpa.com for gift certificates and photo gallery. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. And Veterinary Hospital of Laurel and Brown, Turner's Falls, Massachusetts, providing comprehensive care for dogs and cats for over 25 years. New clients welcome, drlaurelandbrown.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's the Copyright Forum. We're joined today by Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's tackle a couple of emails before we get back to the phones. Some short emails and some rather lengthy ones. This one's brief. This one is from Chris. Can you patent an idea for a device without actually building the device or proving that the device will work as designed?
Typically, you need a prototype. I think you need drawings that shows how it would work. I don't recall if you actually need the device. In the devices that I patented, we did make a prototype.
Okay. So if I build an anti-gravity engine in my backyard but it doesn't really work, I can't really patent it.
I wouldn't go that far.
Because I have done that.
If you... I would think that if you had drawings, you know, you could patent the design concept.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I don't think the patent office is going to care whether it works or not.
Okay. Right.
An investor right. might.
Right, but. Right.
This one is from Dan. I'm a builder and consultant of energy-efficient homes, which are also safe for people with chemical sensitivities. My work is also essentially mold-proof, fireproof, termite and vermin-safe. I've combined use of several products in a way rarely seen in the U.S., yet known in Europe. Can or should I protect this idea as intellectual property?
The European originators of a lot of those systems probably already have protection for them.
Yeah, but how would you protect those?
Well, we're getting a lot of patent things.
Yeah.
And we're not,
people
have to understand that we're not qualified to talk about right, that.
So. Okay, well, maybe you've answered the question because the subject heading was copyright regarding better buildings.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's go on to the next one.
I think it would be a patent
here.
Issue.
Yeah.
Previous caller asked about getting stage rights for an adaptation of a screenplay. Is it different if the film is in the public domain?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, very
if
good.
It's in the public domain, you can do anything you want with it.
It's in the public domain?
Right.
Splendid.
And thank you for raising that, because we should have thought of that. But.
All right. One more email, and this is a lengthy one. This is from Liz. All right. Looking forward to hearing your insight on the following. You ready? Take notes. A musical ensemble wants to record a multiple movement piece, a significant work for the instrumentation. Only the first movement has been recorded before. We are looking to obtain the mechanical license to record the whole piece, all the movements. Running into the challenge of how to obtain that given the background of the piece, given that the current rights holder is unknown. And then bullet points. You ready? Composer wrote the piece in 1928 when it was given its premiere. Ooh. The composer registered the copyright for the first movement, which was recorded with the U.S. Copyright Office in December 1952, but only the piece, not the sound recording. The composer died in 1961. The composer's son did a renewal registration in February of 1980 for the first movement of the work, as that is all the father had registered. In 1993, the composer... this goes on forever. In 1993, the composer's son proceeded to register the full piece, all movements, using the name of the piece. There's more, but you want to stop me.
I think Paul needs to handle
this. Yeah, well, you do need to get a mechanical license because it's a registered piece. It has been apparently published.
Apparently the first movement.
It's the recording of the first movement. The rest of it may be an unpublished work, so you'd need to get permission as opposed to... And, you know, you wanted to talk about the Music Modernization Act?
No, not really.
But they're going to...
I withdraw the question.
They're streamlining mechanical publishing, so if that... Which is, it's a compulsory license to record somebody's
okay.
stuff. Which
well,
is
let's
what
go
we're
on a
about.
Little bit further down this long scroll.
But wait, there's more.
The son died in 2001. While I can find the son's social security number online, I've yet to be able to find a published obituary to know if the composer's son had any children. The composer's son's wife predeceased the son. The short story is, and Lord knows it's not a short story, the short story is I cannot find who, at this point, controls the copyright to pursue obtaining the appropriate permission to record and commercially distribute the recorded whole work in its entirety for the first time.
My advice is to hire a copyright attorney who will help you wade through all of this, because I think this is way too
probably
complex.
Trust an estate's attorney to get into the son's estate.
Or,
when he,
or
but,
both.
But you can't find an obituary, so you can't even find out where the guy died.
Right.
You know, you hate to, although I do it all the time, suggest, just record it. And if there's somebody out there with an interest, they'll find you.
Oh, gosh. That's spinning the wheel. That's a roulette
better to
wheel.
Better ask forgiveness than permission.
Okay. I mean, this is almost like an orphan work, and it sounds like she's really done what she's supposed to do in trying to find and understanding what rights she needs.
Yeah. Right.
Heck,
she went on the dark web and got a social security number, so it's pretty fine.
If it were me, I would still hire a copyright attorney just to have all of those things verified in case somebody did come after me.
And have the attorney be able to say,
okay.
I've turned over every rock and
right.
all that stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's
right.
a good
right.
idea.
Well, what a conundrum.
Before the show ends, I think we better go back to some calls here. And 800-348-2551, the number. Stephen in Pittsfield, you've been waiting a while. Stephen, you're on.
Hey, that's okay. Listen, I've got about 40 songs that I've written over the last 40 years or so, and I've been recording them in a studio very recently. And I'm just looking, I've never copyrighted them, and I'm looking for the safest and simplest way to do that.
Yeah, I mean, if you're recording them now and they've never been released, you can put them all on one copyright application at copyright.gov, say they're unpublished. And that'll be one $55 application. And you know, you can send them MP3s. You know, don't go crazy with resolution because it'll take you forever to upload them. But you can do them all on one copyright application at copyright.
What resolution would you recommend?
160 is fine, or 128. Okay. Just so they can hear the melody and the lyrics.
Okay.
You know?
Well, Stephen, thank you very much for the call. And over to Gene. Gene in Woodstock.
Hello.
Hey, Jim. Hey, I've got a doppelganger. I was going to ask the same question just about the song copyright, and I guess one other wrinkle might be regarding notation. Do audio files and MP3s copywritten also translate over into notation and sheet music?
Yeah, you can do sheet music or a recording. Either way is fine. When you do the recording, you're actually going to be you'll be registering the copyright to the recording as well as the underlying music. So you're getting kind of a twofer with in that situation. But if you have it on notation and that's how you want to register it, go ahead.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks,
Thank you,
Jim. We appreciate the call. Over to Jennifer in Saratoga Springs. Jennifer.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm an educator, and my students often like to use pictures off the internet for projects and presentations.
Mm-hmm.
I have been told, or I have read, that these images may be used as long as they are being used for educational purposes and that they are being cited properly. But I've also been told that that is not legal. So I'm just wondering if I could get your view on that.
How are they using them? I mean, what format? Is it just for like a PowerPoint presentation that then gets discarded? Or is it something that's going to live on the net?
No, it's not going to live on the net unless they choose to, you know, if they have a website and they want to post it.
I just spent the morning a month ago talking to the BOCES. I guess Jennifer, you didn't make it to the talk, but as long as it stays in the court in the classroom, really almost anything goes. And teaching the students how to cite something is I guess a good educational exercise, but it's not legally necessary either. But yeah, I mean, using stuff for educational purposes that don't leave the classroom and don't wind up on YouTube and sort of generally published.
And also things that don't wind up in the curriculum that are used over and over and over again.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
All right, Jennifer.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call. And let's see here. Looks like Christopher in Latham is next. Christopher.
Hello. I got a question that I'm hoping is kind of like falls in this domain. I'm a software engineer and I work on a platform called LifeRay, which is a open source platform. When I say I work on it, I mean like my company uses it and we build things on top of it to kind of just for like manufacturing automation and other things like that. But yeah. I also am a open source contributor on the core platform itself. So kind of the distinction is that, you know, in that kind of regard, I build things for the core platform that gets shipped with the actual product itself, the LifeRay product. And then at work, I work on it for things specific to our company. So I'm wondering if there's some type of conflict there or if there's anything I should be aware of.
I don't think so. I mean, it's sort of two different. You're
apples and oranges.
Yeah, you're kind of doing two different functions in the open source community, one for an employer and one for your own professional edification.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any kind of conflict there at all.
And it's
I have one other question, if I could.
Okay.
So kind of along those lines, I do write a blog, and some of the blog material is related to the technical challenges, both, you know, at my employer and, you know, also just like open source challenges. Mm-hmm. I generalize those in the blog, just, you know, how to do certain things. Is there any type of issue you can foresee with that?
Do you mention in your profile that you work for a specific company that you might be talking about in your blog?
I do briefly, but it's something that could be removed easily.
Well, this is more of an ethical question. I don't think it has anything to do with copyright.
Yeah, I don't either.
All right.
Okay, well, I appreciate you guys fielding the question.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Christopher. Thanks. We appreciate the call. And let's see who's next here. Oh, how about John in Schenectady? John.
Hi. My question is similar to the educator. I'm designing an exhibit for a museum, and I'm just grabbing every image I can off the net. I've got about 12 of them. From Google Images, and a lot of them say copyright may apply, but I'm ignoring that.
Nice.
And it'll be on public display in the museum. What problems might I have?
Oh, boy.
Don't use the images that you downloaded in Toto. I mean, if you're using them for reference in order to create something new, that's fine. I mean, that's everybody does that. But using the images completely is probably going to get you into trouble because you're creating a derivative work or you're making unauthorized copies or doing, you know.
Okay, now if somebody recognizes one of them and say, hey, that's my image, what would happen next?
They would sue you. If it were me, they would sue you copyright infringement.
You know, it's a nonprofit. So what?
I'm sorry. That doesn't matter.
They'll sue the museum. Okay.
Sue you and the museum for copyright infringement if it were
my work. Now, what kind of, what would the suit involve? I mean, supposing I just say, I'm not going to use it anymore. I'll take
No. It may be too late.
It doesn't matter. It's sort of like if you steal a car and you get caught and you say, I'm going to return the car. You return the car before you get caught, but then get caught, you're still going to be prosecuted for grand.
Yeah, I mean, unless fair use or something applies, and it doesn't sound to me obvious that it would, it's just not really something you should do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dangerous, very dangerous.
Yeah, definitely don't take any of Bill's images. I think we know that for a fact.
Or mine.
Yeah, or Polly's. All right.
You
can use my song if you want.
It's real simple to just click on the permissions tab under Google Images, and it will tell you. And very often, there's no problem using
if
the image for a nonprofit, and you ask permission.
Mm. Mm, good point.
So, you know, it would behoove you to take the extra 10 minutes to look at the copyright
notice. Now, just hypothetically, say you clicked on this information and it was wrong or it was incomplete. The copyright information.
Well, that's not your fault. That's the person that filled out the copyright.
Well, but if you're online and you're looking at, you said Google Images or whatever, whatever you're using, and you click on the copyright information and it's incomplete.
If you do an image search, you will come up with all of the variations of that image on Google. And if you track it back, you'll eventually find something. In most cases, it says copyright by so-and-so.
Yeah.
Okay. We only have about a minute or two here. Let's go to Pauline in Rexford. Pauline, you're on.
Oh, thank you. This is going to be really quick.
Okay.
My question is twofold. When you enter a poetry contest, is your poem then the property of whoever you sent it to, whether they publish it or not? And also, does the same hold true if you send a short story to a magazine and they publish it?
It depends on the user agreement.
Right. Yeah. And also, anything you send, put your copyright notice on it. And you try to clarify that with the people you're sending it to, what their policy is.
Yeah, I would say generally no, though.
Generally no.
Unless you sign something away, you know, the copyright's going to stay with you.
Yeah, copyright can only be transferred in writing.
But even if I don't have a copyright on it, it's just like something I wrote and then I submitted it.
You haven't registered the copyright, which is you own the copyright. You just haven't registered it yet. So
put a C with a circle around it, the date and your name, and that's a copyright notice.
And
that should go with each of your contributions.
And you don't have to be registered to put the notice on.
Right.
And if you think, and if the thing does win and gets printed, then I think you want to register it because now it's being circulated out into the world.
And people will possibly take it.
All right, one more email here, and then we'll close up the program. This one is going back a ways. Can a professor whose paycheck comes from tax dollars, land-grant college, copyright a publication he wrote when assigned to serve the public?
I don't think so. States can't own copyrights.
If it's his.
Right, but.
And state employees can't own copyrights.
It was specifically the state?
Yeah.
And if it was part of his job to write that book, it's going to be the employer is going to own it. If it's something he wrote on his own time, then it's going to be his.
All right. Well, we are done. And thank you, Polly and Bill and Paul for being here.
This was a good one.
Support comes from Kent Hicks Construction, specializing in deep energy retrofits, passive house, zero energy homes, and historic restorations, serving the Berkshires, Pioneer Valley, and all of Western Massachusetts for over 25 years. KentHicksConstruction.com. Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services, from booklets to stationery and labels to lawn signs in downtown Amherst, Massachusetts. AmherstCopy.com. Windhorse Naturopathic Clinic, Brattleboro, Vermont, offering naturopathic medicine, oxidative medicine, colon hydrotherapy, and acupuncture, specializing in Lyme disease, now accepting new primary care patients. WindhorseNaturopathic.com. And Travels with Sarah, organizing private African safaris with authentic tented camps and lodges, accompanied by Africa specialist Sarah Kearns, 845-926-4774 for more information. Well, that's it for the show, and what a cracking copyright forum we had today. Thanks to Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp. Thank you for listening and for the great questions. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Susie Check, I answered the phones. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Darren Tracy returns and we'll fix up your home. Or maybe not. We'll find out.